On the 27th of May 1972, in Liverpool's Metropolitan Cathedral of Christ the King, Archbishop George Andrew Beck ordained Thomas Anthony Williams to the priesthood of the Archdiocese of Liverpool. Now, 50 years later, as he celebrates the Golden Jubilee of his ordination, Bishop Tom, as he now is, joins me to reflect on his priestly ministry and recalls his first steps towards the priesthood.
The first time I ever said I want to be a priest was in the final year of primary school. And I remember it was just when John the 23rd and the announcement of the Vatican Council, and the teacher had pictures around the classroom. And we had to write an essay about things. And she said, what do you want to be when you grow up? I put, I'd like to be a priest. And she said, and what, you had to say what you needed to do. And I remember she questioned me afterwards and said, why did you put this down? I said, put what down? She said, you've said here you've got to have good eyesight to be a priest. Because I was very self-conscious of having glasses. And I said, yeah, well, I've seen the priest looking for the specks of host on the chalice. I said, so you need good eyesight to see if there's any there. Oh, she said, I think there's more to it than that. The thing that made me trigger, I suppose, was I was in secondary school. Failed 11 plus, but actually I passed it, but there was no places in Liverpool. There was only two grammar schools at the time. And that was, you know, the secondary school was awful. We had 13 teachers, all supply teachers in my second year. We didn't do any subjects, didn't do anything. We were given a piece of paper to draw pictures each day, or choir in the afternoon. It was really a sink school. And I was so frustrated with that. We did the 13 plus, and one of the teachers said, oh, here's a piece of paper, you have to say which school you want to go to. So basically I put down Cardinal Allen, which was one, art school, and then I put all the others down 1 to 20. But in the meantime I told Father Barra that I wanted to be a priest. The reason for that was because the teacher, one of the supply teachers, told all of us one day that none of us were fit for anything except to brush the streets or go to jail, the common up garden scouses. And I remember being so angry with that I thought to myself, how dare you? So basically, I wanted an education, and I got it. I went to Chrisleton. I remember Cardinal Dean, and Archbishop Dean as he was, asked me why I wanted to be a priest. And I think the answer I gave him was to serve people. So basically that was it. It wasn't about Mass or the sacraments. It was really the missionary element of it. And then I went to a major seminary, which was a missionary college, and it was about serving the community. So I always saw my role as a priest is to serve people, basically.
You were one of the last students to study at the English College in Lisbon.
Yep.
What was that like?
Well, 1971, my friend and I, Bob Dewhurst, and we closed the gate when the college closed and came back and went to Apollon. Then, I mean, I love Lisbon. Lisbon was 5 years, a completely different system. It was run pre-Vatican II. And we were blessed, really, with a very good scripture prof. But the main thing that kept me alive there was football. Really played football every afternoon, and I suppose that side of it, and the camaraderie. We were 18 when we went, but the average age was only 36 in the college. I learned a lot through that. Everything was community, you know. We spent Christmas there, we spent Easter there. I wasn't allowed home for 2 years. In fact, we came home 3 times in 5 years. So that gave me a good grounding in sometimes about understanding of community, understanding of how to celebrate the sacraments. And there was a change. The routine of the college changed from being very severe to being a bit more allowing other people in. We had a Baptist minister came to teach us the Psalms. And we had a few other people from outside came. Dr. Toomey and Dr. De Lacy came, talked about medical ethics and talked about different things. So we had an opportunity to be really well fed, I thought.
You were ordained in the Metropolitan Cathedral on the 27th of May 1972, so 50 years ago this year. First of all, you served in Garston.
I've been in Garston a year, and Bishop Harris rang me to say, would I be chaplain to Bellerive, which meant I basically was there each day of the week. It was a great experience for me, from having been in an old boys' school all my life, to then be in a school with 650 girls from Widnes and Liverpool. And they were all very intelligent as well. And I loved that. That was really good. Because I had two sisters. One was as old as the oldest there, and one was as old as the youngest there. I was able to see them all as my sisters, and it was a good experience. I loved that. I was there until 1980.
Later you moved to Sacred Heart, and you became chaplain to the Old Royal Hospital.
January 75, I was appointed to Sacred Heart, which was a whole different world, really. So I kept on Bellerive. Bernard Jackson was there with me at the time, Father Bernard. He was a good chaplain, and he had had good experience at Sefton General. So we had a week-on, week-off routine. That was hard work. If you worked out the hours that we actually spent in the hospital, I think the week you were on, you'd very, very often be there for more than 100 hours a week. We were called every night almost, and we were called, and we'd visit each ward. It got a bit busier as well when the new Royal opened, but in the old Royal, 480 beds, we visited everyone once a week. Different style now to modern hospitals.
But hospital ministry is something which has stayed with you throughout your priestly life, isn't it? You've been in Catholics in Healthcare since you've been a bishop at the Bishops' Conference. You've worked in chaplaincy as well.
Well, I was a national chaplain at one time, the bishop responsible for hospital chaplains. Yes, I mean, the whole NHS has changed and the whole hospital chaplaincy. It still comes down to one-to-one. The role changed in the sense that because of the different situations that arose, we were going more and more into crisis and trauma than just the usual visiting. And so the one thing I did in the Royal, when the new Royal opened, because that was five hospitals into one, is that we got the help of a lot of lay people, and we organised them to visit the wards. So we had communication that they were able to bring communion every Sunday afternoon to everyone in the hospital who wanted it, because they could listen to the Mass on the headphones. That worked really well, and they were brilliant. They were really brilliant. And that idea of not just being the priest, but you had the hospital ministers, I worked on that and developed that. It creaks nowadays, and COVID has changed everything, but I still think, you know, you've got to rely on the idea of the sacramental ministry in hospital. Because in the old days, I say the old days, when I first started, every patient, when they were clerked in, their religion was at the top of the bed. And in the old Royal, it was blue for Church of England, it was red for Catholic, it was white for anyone else, and it was yellow for Jewish, with the patient's name on. So you didn't have to ask them, you just say hello, and then people just listen. So I enjoyed that. You met some fantastic people during that time, some really good, interesting people. Later on, the only situations, you just couldn't do that in time-wise. You know, there was trauma, crisis, and that got more and more and more. You know, in the end, in 1981, I was on my own. But one time, for 9 months, I never had more than 4 hours sleep. And I was on call every night. And we were averaging 56 emergency calls a week. Now, you know, you could spend 2 hours on one of those calls. And it wasn't just going in and anointing. You were there with relatives, family, nurses, staff, doctors. It was the whole being part of a team. So that was a whole different role to the original chaplaincy. The better you did your job, the more they called you. And that was like a balance all the time. So, but yeah, that memory of people. I mean, one of the great triumphs of my life is when you meet people as a bishop going down the diocese, and they'll say, "Oh, you were the one who. You were there when," and they'll say with a smile. So you think to yourself, "Oh, that's the best thanks you can ever get."
As time went on, you moved again.
Already at Waltingham, 1983. I was there 3 months. I was there for 9 months, really, but during those 9 months, I served in St Jude in Wigan because the priests were ill and I was at like a stopgap. I then looked after Holy Ghost in Ford, and then I came back to Our Lady's, and then I came to Our Lady Immaculate's. From St Jude's, the priest I took over from went to St Jude, so I took over in Our Lady Immaculate. Now, that was a whole new experience. It was being back home then. I was there until 88, 89, and then I took over St Anthony's as well, so I ran both then. I was there as a Cub Scout and Scout, but I was actually from St Sylvester's, and they were two rivals, you know. They were very... St Anthony's was established by Lancashire Catholics and Lisbonian priests as well. St Sylvester's was Irish, and in the olden days, there were rivals, the schools were rivals, everything was rivals. In fact, my Uncle Jimmy, who was only 21 years older than me, he sadly passed away during COVID, but he rang me up the day I was appointed, you know, the news got round. He said, "Is it true you're going to St Anthony's?" I said, "Yeah." "Traitor, put the phone down." But there were people in St Anthony's who'd rather go into the Orange Lodge than go into St Sylvester's. You think, what? But those days have changed now, you know. The whole area is depopulated. And I looked around there, and I was at home there. But the thing is, the whole sense of parish, when people, you know, the diaspora, they all went to Kirby and Speke and everywhere else. And everyone used to say, it's getting worse round here. But the housing conditions improved. A lot of other things had improved. People's working things had improved. But they still thought it was worse because the sense of community had gone. The sense of belonging, you know, our team and all this and all. And I think that's still a big gap. The idea, because that was the heart of the Catholic community in the whole of the north of England in some ways. You've got the North End and South End. I mean, you've got to remember, just in Scotland Road itself, there were 350,000 Irish-born Catholics in that area in 1847, during the famine, and all the trauma and different things that had happened. So the whole sense of Catholicism, of Catholic schools, of belonging, of everything else, was there. Rebuilding St Anthony's, or getting it renovated, made a big difference to people, because it wasn't just the money. We managed to raise an awful lot of money for that, and it was the local people that contributed.
And then in 1989, the Hillsborough tragedy occurred. Mm. You've done a lot of...
Our Lady of Max then, yeah.
You've done a lot of work with the families. You've walked alongside them. You've been there for them. How big a thing has that been in your ministry?
Pastorally, I knew some of those who died, the families. So I suppose that what struck me, and I'm very proud of this bit, is that no one knew what to do. I mean, I'd given up my ticket for the Everton game because I couldn't get a supply. So that night at 6:30, when news was still coming through in Our Lady Immaculate's, everyone's still in trauma, really, knowing what's happened. And we had a sort of children's mass. And two of the families, I'll always be grateful for them, came. The little boy dressed as a Liverpool player and the other one dressed as an Everton player. So I brought them to the front and said, you know, this is what football should be about. And, you know, the two mates both together. And little did they realise, at the back of the church, there was a journalist for one of the national newspapers. He quoted me in the paper. And I told Graham Sharp about this, and Everton did that. You've seen that famous, beautiful picture of the boy and the girl, 96, on the back. So I'm claiming credit for that one. But it was Graham Sharp who got that doing. But I suppose all you do is, when people come to you, you respond. So that's all I did. And since that then, I knew them on other levels, you know, some links to the school, who do weddings, baptisms. So at the time, I just did one or two funerals, but later on, you get to know a lot of the families on another level, which is all about community, really. And so I've always tried to keep my distance, but at the same time, be there if they need you. And the other thing was the 20th anniversary, particularly. So I remember sitting next to Andy Burnham in front of the cop. Now, I spent half my childhood in the cop because I used to go to the boys' pen. But that experience was traumatic. And I remember Andy saying, we've got to do something. And to his credit, he's the one who did all the donkey work and that. And so I was involved in terms of the fund and just as one of the trustees, really. But I've always tried to keep in the background with that. Pastorally, I think in these situations, it's knowing what not to do and not to have any answers. I don't have any answers. As a fellow supporter and a lover of sport, I got involved with the main figures in Liverpool supporters, but basically just to touch base. But there's some really powerful, wonderful people involved in all of that. You know, really, it wasn't about who you support. It's about the city and about, you know, the whole imprint.
And moving on to 2003, you were appointed as a bishop, as an auxiliary bishop in the Archdiocese of Liverpool. How did that feel?
Unexpected. I had a clue because I received a letter that you do get, and it's got confidentiality and everything else, and under pain of mortal sin and all sorts, about someone else, you know, recommendations. And I thought, oh, my goodness. And as I'm reading it, the phone goes, and someone I knew well, one of the local teachers, said, oh, I've just had a letter about you. Oh, I said, look at the bottom. And he went, oh, no, and put the phone down. So I thought, oh, good Lord, someone else has had one about me. So that was it until the actual happened, which was the 25th of March, the Feast of the Annunciation. Again, can I think about it, I asked, and the nuncio said, no, you say yes, sign here. And that was it. So, yeah, unexpected. But the Archbishop Patrick was fantastic, you know, really supportive. Yeah, I mean, that was the whole idea of, you know, what do I do now? I'm still asking the same question.
Has it been a different sort of ministry to parish life?
Well, it's difficult. I miss the parish. I mean, I think the parish is about dealing with people. And sometimes when people expect you to be an administrator rather than a people person, you know, I don't like to tell people what to do. What I like to do is to respond to what people need. I've got clear ideas of what not to do. But I think that's a different role. As a bishop, I'd rather be a pastoral bishop rather than an organising bishop. Again, we are going through difficult times, and we're going through times where people are questioning their faith and understanding. And I do think sometimes that we need to get back to the sacramental ministry about, you know, not why people are not going to church. It's about them being the church and understanding that they're needed, and it's about belonging. And you need to get in people a sense of belonging, because a lot of people feel disorientated and unwanted. And that hurts. That hurts. But there's faith, and I would think for most people, it's part of who they are and the sense of belonging. I'd love to get back to that.
And then moving to just last year, you were awarded the Freedom of the City. Freedom of the City of Liverpool.
Well, I think the phrase is gobsmacked. Never even dreamt of that or what it means. And what was even better, in the sense that even when they organised it and that everything, they said, who do you want to come? Do we do this with the council? Well, the Lord Mayor and they were phenomenal. And the staff in the town hall were just unbelievable. They really did me proud. I mean, it was fantastic. My, you know, and it was the Lord Mayor who said to me, she said, when you come in, she said, we're going to play the triumphal thing, but I want to play the Zedcars theme. I said, oh, you can't do that. I said, oh, yes, you will. She said, and if you see the film of it, when they did it, everybody started smiling and laughing when they played. And that set the scene. So it was a really happy occasion on all levels, you know. It was really class all the way through. Roger Phillips, people, and then Jane Corbett. And then I really was lost for words. It was, I kept thinking to myself, say something negative, will you, for goodness sake, you know. But it was just really, really a pleasure to be there. And, you know, fantastic. Really, really, I couldn't ask for more, really, in some ways.
So you're celebrating 50 years of priesthood. How do you reflect on 50 years of ministry?
Well, yeah, I'm 19 as a bishop, same day. I suppose it's my memory, I keep thinking of things, and then I realise how long ago it was. So all the years blend into one in many ways. I think the joys of ministry change in a sense. The sense of belonging goes. And someone said to me once, how many friends did you make in the hospital? And I said, oh, thousands, but most of them are dead. Because you get to know people at a very intimate level as patients. And you also make friends with people. The other thing is that I suppose the ministry was not Catholic, because most of the staff were either Welsh Methodist or Church of England. And to be honest, they all became great friends. So the sense of church became much wider for me, the ecumenical side. And I just began to respect other denominations more, because, let's face it, when I was brought up, never met anyone who wasn't a Catholic. And then in hospital, you meet all denominations and none. You realise there were some fantastic people out there. And you judge them by what they did rather than what label they had. So you've got people of real vocation, real integrity, teaching as well. You know, there were very few people who had their faith on the forehead. It was always in the heart. And that's where I began to respect that. That really was the joy of ministry, is being part of something bigger than yourself.